Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Tim Miller, John Curcio, Jazz Admaja, Chris Fuchs, John Lloyd, Atif Sheik, Justin Maitner, Gavante Chillis, Molly Ficarella, Thomas Navin, Quentin Tracy, Mike Franz, Nathan McKenzie, Joe McIndoe, Trayvon Brady, Steve Rogers, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Tom Gerke, and Eric Eels. Thank you so much to all these patrons. And you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined by Mr. Matt Truex. What's up, Matt?
Nothing much, dude. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. So, Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman, you're a host.
Yes,
check it
I
out
am.
If you haven't. I've been on their show. You've been on this show a few times. And so you're now a regular contributor to Always Hold On to Smallville. So happy to have you back, Matt.
I appreciate that, man. I really like the idea of being in with the Patreon stuff lately, too. I'm sorry I missed the first honorable mentions one, but I'm looking forward to number 10 favorite Smallville soon.
That's right. As you heard at the beginning of the show, we do have a Patreon. So go to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with an S to contribute. And here's some of the great exclusive content that we're offering to you over there. So Matt is a part of that as well. So today we're talking about Scare. What are your memories of this episode, Matt?
I don't have any memories of this episode, Zach. I remember the scene with Chloe, seeing her mom slash her, you know? But, like, that's about it. So this was kind of fun to get, like, a new episode of Smallville after, whatever, 19 years or something?
A fresh episode of Smallville.
Yeah, excuse me. I'm so sorry. A fresh episode of Smallville. But, like, from the start, too, like, is this the first... like outbreak episode that they've done? I know Martha.
Outbreak. Yeah. I thought about that. I'm like, is this a movie plot of an episode? But it's more like a genre.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like a specific movie. Like so many movies and novels and genre TV shows have this kind of thing. And I believe it is. It does happen a few times later on down the road, but this is the first time it's like a thing sweeping through the town, right?
Yeah. And I feel like it is a genre thing, but I feel like that, like the suit got ripped when you're inside the thing and you got exposed when you're trying to be safe. I feel like that's very outbreak, especially like at this time before stuff like Contagion or the other ones that have come out, right?
That's true. Yeah, the classic like someone who's infected, you're wearing an environmental suit, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
Because they're gonna rip.
At least
right
they didn't
through.
Do the like he didn't tell anybody for an hour and then he just fainted. Like, oh no, what happened? He must have been exposed, you know?
It's like the guy in the zombie movie who gets bitten but like tries to hide it. Like.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is before the zombie creature. Although we do see a couple of zombified characters, it seems, in this episode for some reason.
That seemed to be the go-to for these dreams for a second.
How does that have to do with mental illness or being, you know? And then Lana's zombie looked kind of like a leopard or something. I don't really know what was going on there.
That's
but,
too.
But we'll get into it. But yeah, so Scare. It's like you know, if you want to make a DC Comics analogy, it's like they all got sprayed with the fear toxin, right, from the Scarecrow.
Yeah, very much. That Lex was working on it.
Right, and this is before Batman Begins, so this is really our first live action fear toxin, if you want to look at it that way. And,
but
and
I
understand
it was after Terminator 3. Is that correct?
I believe it was after Terminator 3. It's Rise of the Stock Footage. We'll get into that during the episode. But yeah, so I mean, really not a lot of episode stuff to discuss, really, but we can go ahead and jump right into it. Scare.
With all our safety precautions, how the hell does a lab explode?
Well, when you're dealing with meteor rocks, it's very difficult to predict how our chemicals will react. Mr. Luther, we're doing everything we can. After the alarm sounded, we sealed the room. All affected personnel have been quarantined, and we're trying to fix the damaged pipes.
You mean the bacteria is still leaking out?
Only in that room.
Once the situation is under control, I want the project dismantled.
But, Mr. Luther, your father negotiated this contract with the military. We stand to make a lot if we can ever market the compound.
And exactly what is the market for toxins that invoke a person's worst nightmare before they fall unconscious, Dr. Ford?
Well, think of the good. I mean, we could disable the enemy without ever using violence. I mean, we have statistics to prove.
Statistics aren't lying in those beds. My employees are. And I'm afraid they're not the only ones.
What do you mean?
Someone who was visiting the plant this morning is at the hospital right now with the same symptoms. Is he contagious?
Oh, no, sir. No, sir. I mean, the bacteria can't be transmitted from one person to another. It has to be inhaled directly.
And there's no need to call the CDC and panic the entire town. Now, where are we with the antidote?
This will clarify when it reaches 1,000 degrees Kelvin, and then we can test it.
What's the ETA?
Another 5 hours.
Scare is the 10th episode of Smallville's fourth season. It aired on December 1st, 2004. It was written by Kelly Saunders and Brian Peterson and directed by David Carson. Now, David Carson is a familiar name to me, being a huge Star Trek fan. He directed many episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. He directed Star Trek Generations. And he directed 3 episodes of Smallville, this being his final one. He directed Rogue back in season 1. And then he directed Devoted earlier this season. Okay. And he closed it out with Scare. So there you go. A very wide range of episodes from David Carson.
And I get Devoted and Facade mixed up. Which one was Devoted?
I think everyone does. So Devoted is the one with the Gatorade, the Kryptonite Gatorade. And okay, Facade cool. is the one with the plastic surgery. So
his plastic surgery mom. Yeah. Okay,
yes,
cool.
But they were back to back at the beginning of the season, and they're just the most high school episodes of the show. And it's very, and it's like football is involved, and yes, I get them confused as well. So this episode starts out, and we have Clark in the loft, you know, studying or something. Mm-hmm. And then Lana comes up, very provocatively dressed. And you immediately you feel like something is off here, like yeah. But to be honest, like from Lana's side, I buy it, right? Because it's like I feel like Jason's keeping secrets from me. Okay, this tracks, right? But the way Tom Welling is playing it, like, and I enjoy it the way he's playing it. But he's really like, oh well, am I really the one you should be talking to about this? Like yeah. He's really having it up. Clark would not act this way.
He's the penthouse letters of Clark Kent, you know. Like, well, nothing would ever happen to you, you know?
Yeah. So she's all like, oh, well, I feel like he came to Smallville for another reason. And this all really does track. Because
it does.
I feel like this is the point, like, his mom showed up last episode, mm-hmm. and Jason's mom. And this is where they were like, okay, I guess we're going to make them bad guys.
Yeah, that's my note here. Like, they must have figured it out at this point. Because his line at the end of this, his last line before Clark pushes him away is basically like Clark or till Lana pushes him over the side. Let's get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. The last line he has is like Clark Kent can't keep you safe. And I'm like, okay, so this is his dream, and his greatest fear is that he's the enemy to her now.
Yeah, it's all vague enough where it will still track. At least They're smart enough now to not contradict themselves whenever they change their minds in the future.
Because fans like us are happy to drywall over the holes in the logic.
Yes, exactly. this is Jason's dream. Okay,
yes.
which is funny because it's like this goes on for a good 2-3 minutes and he is not in it. So I don't know, Matt, how many dreams have you had where you just kind of show up?
Like so 5 minutes. I was trying to look this up, and I can't find anything solid. I found like one guy's answer that like it could happen, but I do not trust on one of those like Quero or like how do you know ask me anything type sites, and anyone can respond to it. If your listeners have any insight into this, I'd love to know. But I can't imagine that you can be completely out of your dream. Like maybe you could do a third person dream. I don't know. What are your dream experiences, Zach?
Well, not like this.
Yeah.
although, you know, I will say season 4 being as thirsty as it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you do question, like, oh, well, maybe Clark's just
feeling the mood, feeling the vibe tonight. You know, maybe he's just acting this way. Because, you know, they start, like, it gets pretty, like, a heavy makeout session on the couch, you know, and then Jason comes in and pulls him off and starts beating him up. It is a clue that Clark gets actually beat up by Jason here. Like, he's bloody and stuff. We're like, oh, okay,
well, this maybe not. Lana, yeah.
Yeah, this really not may not be all night motley what it seems. And then he has those lines to lines like, Clark can't save you from me. No one can. You're like, oh, what does that mean, right?
Oh, so did Clark get bloody? I don't remember that.
Yeah, he got like a bloody nose and stuff.
Oh,
so,
okay, good call. I didn't catch but you're right.
But then Lana, in true Lana fashion, which I know you're excited about, is she comes up to him and pushes him off the balcony to his death.
Lana kills. I'm counting it for 2 seconds until he wakes up, but Lana kills, man.
Lana kills a couple people in this episode, although it's both dreams. So this is very appropriate that you're talking about this one, since you instigated that category.
What
happens in your dream stays in your dreams. That's the way I see it. So that's not going to go on the tally board.
That's fair.
But she does push
two dream tallies on that.
Yeah, there you go. Put an asterisk by that. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that she kills both of her boyfriends in this episode. That's their greatest nightmare is Lana killing them. It does say something.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So file that away.
So what do you think of this as like, or the, I think we should talk throughout like the greatest fear thing of it. Cause like with Jason, maybe we can't talk to this cause I don't remember exactly how his character ends, just that it kind of goes off the rails.
But well, you don't even know what his motivations are right now.
Right.
So it's hard to say if this is accurate or not.
So he's tough. Well, I guess we'll talk to the other ones when we get to it, but I want to know if I want to see if we can think of like something that's worse than that, or if we think that this was, you know, what their greatest fears really would be in this situation.
Yeah, like Lexis, for example. Maybe the show thought it was going to be something else and changed it at the last minute. We'll talk about that.
Someone's got the companion.
So Jason falls in the bar, in quote unquote, and then we have this transition to it's in real life, and he's in the Talon,
right?
And he falls from the upstairs to it like a table. There's always if anyone falls off a balcony, there's always a table there to break their fall and break, and it looks more effective that way. But so he does that, and then everybody's like, "Oh my god!" People rush over to him, and then Lana's upstairs, and she comes down and gets him. And so I've always been wondering, like, okay, so he came to pick her up or something. She says later, right?
Right.
It's like, does he live there? Does he live with Lana in the Talon? And I thought no for a long time, because it would be very obvious, right? Like, he's this teacher living with his student, right? I'm sure. That's right, because he lived at the college. Remember, he went to Central Kansas A&M, and there was like a whole scene or a couple scenes over there where he was there in his dorm room. His dorm room had a fireplace. This was in Run, by the way.
I don't remember that. Okay.
I remember the absurdity of his dorm room having a fireplace. They're like, okay, I guess he lives there. But the thing is, at the end of this episode, he kind of packs his bags and leaves. And Lana's like, are you leaving? Like, wait, did he live there?
I know. And like, why are these pictures around? I don't know. Plus,
it's confusing.
Talk about obvious. Like, in order to leave their apartment, they have to walk through a very crowded coffee shop where everyone's going to be talking about him leaving this 18-year-old's apartment at, you know, 7 in the morning every day. And can I say something to Kristen Kruick's acting in this? Where, like, you know, throughout the season, by the way, okay, I have a lot of things to say about Lana in this episode. But I feel like for once, like, she was kind of given something real world to play, and she enjoyed it. Like, when she's upset and at Jason's bedside at the hospital when Chloe and Clark come to visit, like, I buy it. She's doing a really nice job. And later on too, even in the Clark dream, I thought she played it really well. Like, you see like the wounded kind of hurt Lana that was so much of season one, you know. But then when she like kind of does the, I want to help, I want to try to help, who knows how she's going to be able to help. But I liked her acting, and it kind of felt like, oh, finally, it felt like she was reacting to like, I've got something actually real world adjacent to play here. You know, like I know how to play. I know what it looks like when someone's concerned about someone they love because they're in the hospital and they don't know what's going on. And it's nothing
with witches or tattoos.
Yeah,
or anything
exactly.
Like that.
You know?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think, and I mentioned in the last episode too, like Kristen Kruick, she's in a good stretch here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing, and this perfectly dovetails in the next thing I want to talk about. We have a plus one for hospital visit for Jason, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know, at what point do you desensitize that everybody's in the hospital all the time?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Like, she's very concerned, but haven't we been here like many, many times? And actually we have been, as we'll talk about on the tally board.
Yeah, I think by your third season into a show where a standing set is an ever expanding hospital, I think that's when you're pretty desensitized to it. But I mean, I'm sure you remember this watching it growing up too. Like the idea that they were in the hospital every episode just seemed so strange. But it was almost, it became like a place where they hung out half the time. You know, like that's where types of scenes happen. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we are in Jason's hospital room. And Chloe and Clark come to see them, and I like how Clark reacts to just them. He just kind of, Chloe's all like, "Oh, hi, what's going on? What's wrong?" And, yeah. Clark's like, "Well, what happened?" Like he's very, well, he's it's hard for him to see them together like this because this is new, right? They're like together out in the open.
Right.
And I like that little subplot of the episode because he even says later he's like, "It's just that you know, by the time I found out about it, they were so serious. Like there was no like." Oh, this is happening now. It's like, boom, these people are like in love and living together, possibly. So.
Yeah.
And Lana expositions to them that that Jason is in like a panic state of a coma.
Yes.
And his heart rate's going out of control. And at some point, they fear that he'll have a heart attack and die because, you can only sustain that state for so long.
It's like he's experiencing some sort of extreme nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, by the way. I skipped it. Apologies. In Jason's nightmare that we saw earlier, Lana tells Clark, quote, "He's really starting to scare me." So that's an episode title, set in episode plus one. So.
Okay. Between, like, this episode is Smallville bingo. Not only do we have Lana kills, but, like, the minute we see Lex, he's got, like, there's walking, talking at the plant. He's got so many awesome lines. We've got specialists flying in from Metropolis at, like, minute five. It's great.
Oh my god. Yeah, Matt, I have thought of a new thing. Maybe I'll do on the Patreon sometime and we can all watch an episode together or something, but Smallville Bingo.
That would be so much fun.
I love that idea.
That's a great like, Patreon extra or like, you know, yeah. Between seasons something.
Lex walking through the corridor. Clark showing up. How the hell did you get here? Security. Yeah.
What the hell are you doing here?
This episode truly would win Smallville Bingo because we're like 5 minutes in and we're already talking about all these things. But Chloe and Clark get sent to the Talon because Lana says, "Oh, Jason left his insurance card in my apartment. Could you guys go get it? I don't want to leave." So again, I'm like, I guess he lives there,
right?
Because his insurance card is there. So then I didn't really I thought about it and then I immediately moved it to the side because like, well, no, as you said, Matt, it's really obvious unless there's a back door I'm unaware of in that apartment, Jason going to and from there. Also, we saw another place he lived to college, but apparently they live together now. So because right. His insurance card
the packing
is another place.
Thing is really damning later on. I forgot about that.
So they're looking around and this is where Clark is like, he's picking up a picture of them together, looking at it. And Chloe, I love what Chloe says. She's like, "Clark, I don't want to be Dr. Phil, but I think it's time you accepted that they're in a relationship."
That, I mean, that's so Chloe, though, right? Like, this is a John Edwards type line from her. Just some sort of
Miss Cleo.
I feel like she watched a lot of daytime television in the early 2000s.
Well, not to be Judge
Judy. Maybe
the
writers do. Maybe that's what this is.
That's what it is. Yeah, I do, again, not only that, but she goes on to say, well, Clark says what he said about, like, just finding out about it, and it's hard for him to just get up to speed because he didn't know until they were serious. And then she tells him, "We all keep secrets for our own reasons. You of all people should know that." It's like, oh, that's a Smallville mm-hmm. bingo right there.
That made me look up, too. Like, I thought, like, oh, did Alicia happen already? But no, she's right. Just very intuitive just, after 4 years of this, yeah.
Just around the corner, though.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Then we find out that Jason had a meeting at Luther Corp that morning, which Lana did not mention, so he obviously did not tell that.
Right. That probably isn't have anything to do with this, though.
No, of course.
No.
When has anything bad happened at the Luther Corp plant?
Yeah.
But Chloe, going through Jason's phone, good thing he didn't have any text to his mom about, like, the master plan with Lana, huh?
Good point.
So just saying, they hadn't quite figured it all out yet. So
right, they just know that he's going to go bad. They know that in right. some fashion, I guess.
No one can save Lana from him.
Right.
Chloe and Clark go to Luther Corp, and I think I'd mentioned this earlier. like after the whole LexCorp thing and you know that back and forth, mm-hmm. I was like, do we ever see the plant again? But actually, I take it back. We see the plant a bit in season four because this is when Lex is doing experiments at the plant that go right. terribly wrong.
Oh, see, this is confusing to me because then I was thinking of like season five, the barn raising episode when like. They have to go sneak in. Like I guess that's that
the
is
same.
Different...
Yeah, that's the same one though. That's right. to my knowledge.
And then so they just kept using the same like dark blue corridor for
yeah.
every
like in,
Luther.
Like
Injustice.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Okay.
Smallville Bingo. There we go.
There it is.
Locations that corridor with should the piping. Totally be a part of Smallville Bingo.
Exactly. So Clark and Chloe just stroll in here, and I guess Chloe still has her access badge she stole from that guy in season three. Because they just go right in, and
you say so, man. That was good.
And Clark goes to talk to Lex, although it's not like he called ahead or anything. Because Chloe's like, "All right, you go talk to Lex. I'm gonna snoop around." And you know, you think Clark would just show up and be like, "Oh, I'm gonna see my friend Lex or something," but instead he's just walking in some dark corridor. And as you said, Lex is like he's in his trench coat, it's yep. like dynamic lighting. He's strolling. Clark, what the hell are you doing
here?
What are
you doing
here? Classic.
Goes right to the phone wall, like, I need a guest escorted out. Like, no time.
That's legit. Like, that's legit. Like, we're not buddies right now. We got stuff is going down.
No, yeah. And, this is adult Lex. I don't have time for your high school stuff right now.
And I love that in the Awesome Con convention I went to last year and Rosenbaum and Welling were there. Like, before they came out on stage, like, they had the same kind of back and forth. like on the microphones before they come out. It's like, Clark, what the hell are you doing here? And he's like, Lex, you have no security of this facility. Like, it reminded me of this. This is exactly what they were talking about because this is exactly what happens. So
that's cool.
As you mentioned Metropolis, right? Lex yep. says, I just got in from Metropolis. Mm-hmm. You
know? And then at the end of the scene is I'll call in a specialist.
A specialist from Metropolis. Yeah. I really should. Like I don't know how I would quantify it, but I really should have made a category like doctors or specialists or lawyers from Metropolis. Here we go. I'm gonna put out the challenge. At some point, me and Corey Moore will figure this out because he's my stats guy. ... from Metropolis, right? That's mm-hmm. going to be the new category. And we're not going to add it just yet because we need to get the Ooh. Numbers. Okay.
Right.
So, Corey, take your time. I know it's going to take a while, but I think that's the key. ... from Metropolis. I'm flying in the best lawyers from Metropolis, or the best doctors from Metropolis. Right?
Do you think there's going to be a significant fall off of that after season seven? Or I don't remember. Does Tess know a lot of specialists?
Well, they're in Metropolis. And I guess I've waited too long. So Corey, let me know if you want to do that.
No, you're
man.
Halfway
not, it's no
through
big
the
deal.
Actual Kansas, like Smallville years. You're okay.
Right. Well, and then I want to find this commercial that Hulu posted on Twitter, and
that
I know
so
I liked
good.
It or retweeted it. You saw it, right?
Yeah, I think we talked about it on here, but like it was, I watched that and went, oh my God, someone listens.
Like someone is a huge fan of Smallville working yep. at Hulu because they cut together like, when Lex Luthor has a problem, he knows who to call. And it's this montage of like flying the best doctors to Metropolis. It's a very impressive montage. And I have no doubt they used, I forget, it's been a while, but I have no doubt they used the scene from this episode. I don't know when that was. I have to like scroll back through my Twitter and find it, but it was a great montage.
Yeah, I don't remember when it got on the show came onto Twitter, but like maybe you can't say this. I truly was watching that going like, all right, they were looking at what do fans of Smallville like. I swear they would have listened to your show and heard that once or twice and gone, oh cool, all right, super cut, that seems easy because it's in every episode.
Well, I would be very flattered if that was the case. So if anyone on Hulu is listening right now, let me know if you want to talk to Smallville.
You're like, give this guy a free subscription, he's been plugging here for years now. Come on, come correct, Hulu.
So, Clark mentions to Lex what's going on with Jason, and Lex is, of course, like, I don't know, he seemed fine when he was here, and Jason had come in to do a job interview, which makes sense to me. What about you, Matt?
I don't remember the specifics of how he got fired, but like, there's part of me that's
well,
like,
Lex
we're
got him fired.
That quickly?
So Lex got him fired, so he felt guilty about it, yeah.
That's like the thing of, like, I would imagine... You know, Jason, in another episode, if they needed it, I could see them writing him of just, no, the Luthers are dead to me. You know, mm-hmm. I'll never deal with Lex Luthor again. But in this one, it's just like, yeah, I accept your apology, but can I be a plant manager, please?
Plant manager. Could he hire Chloe's dad back while we're at it?
I thought we were going to see him for a second.
Nope, never again. He's gone. Yep. So, but you know who we do see? It's Chloe's mom.
Yeah.
Because Chloe, what a segue. So Chloe wanders off into this dark room, or I guess it was a normal room, and then she got hit by the fear toxin. What was it called? The fear toxin.
Presumably she had been hit before, and this was just, she was exposed to it, and this was it finally taking over, right?
Yeah, because there's a lot of discussion about, oh no, it's contained within the plant. It's not contagious, right? Lex talks to his doctors later about this. And then we find out, oh no, the explosion caused like a cloud, and it like with it was Chloe's house is in that radius, and it was like a two mile radius.
Didn't seem to notice that the Kent farm is in that radius too, but all right.
No, they do not mention that, no. but she goes down this corridor. I like what they used the set of like the torch, but it wasn't the torch. Like they cleared everything out.
I figured that's what it was, or like some classroom. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that checkerboard floor gives it away, right?
Yeah.
But can you imagine the set decorators out there? Like, are you kidding me? We have to take down all this stuff in the torch. Like, it's gonna take us like 3 hours. There's like a gorilla with a letter jacket on and the wall of weird and the rubber chicken, you know, like all the little things.
This crew will get really well or really good at redressing those sets though. You know, like this, they can do that blindfolded by the end of season 9.
That is true. That is true. So it's a surreal environment, which makes sense because it's Chloe's world. So I like that. Again, that's why Jason's fear doesn't make much sense. Like, why are you in Clark's loft? Like,
yeah. Have you ever been to the barn?
When he beat up Clark the last time, so I guess there is a precedent in Devoted, actually, right?
Because
he doesn't beat
up
Clark. Yes. Oh man, he's been there before. Perfect, man. Smallville, I don't give you enough credit.
Yeah, taking it back. Kelly Bryan, great job.
Hope you guys take over the show one day. Mm. So Chloe's walking up and she sees someone who is clearly Chloe in a straitjacket. Yeah. You can tell by the bob haircut. And it's like,
and the voice,
escape,
she's doing like
Chloe.
A little bit of like a baby, you know, creepy baby doll type voice, but it's clearly her. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, you can't escape. Yeah, that, like, whispering. All the women in our family have it. Mm-hmm. And she almost reaches to go turn this person around, but then she doesn't. And then, of course,
she does.
But she's a zombie for some reason. It's like,
yeah,
why does someone with a mental illness have a zombie? Yeah. Like, you know what I think they might have been going for was, you know, the end of Psycho. Spoilers.
Okay.
Have you seen Psycho?
Wow. Yeah. That's a pull, but okay.
I mean, that's what I thought of. Like, you spin the person around and it's like a skeleton or whatever. So maybe that's what they were going for. But yeah, I mean, that I would react by Chloe reacted there.
Yeah.
If you saw that.
Do you think here they're like, we're going to try to stunt cast her mom later on, and that's why they haven't cast her here?
Yeah. So in the companion, it says that Lindsay Bourne portrayed Chloe's mom here. Maybe the woman sitting in the chair until she turns around and she's Allison Mack. Like, and I wonder if this is the same, like, you know, fill-in actress they got in Tomb as well next year. We don't see Linda Carter for 2 more years. And she has, she's brunette there, not a blonde, like she is in this episode and next season. So.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, that takes away what I was thinking. For some reason, I remembered Linda Carter in season 4.
No, she's season 6. So.
I wonder if that woman playing Chloe's mom, that's credited for Chloe's mom, is her stand-in then. Because it really did, it seemed like it was meant to, once you knew what was going on, look like her.
Maybe so. That's a good call. You know who I always wanted to play Chloe's mom from this show? And they totally should have done it. And it's great they got Linda Carter. Because Wonder Woman and legacy casting, but
yeah, of course.
Hear me out. I've said this on the show before, I think. Gillian Anderson. Right?
Oh, that would have been great.
Because Chloe is kind of like a Scully.
Oh.
You know?
I'm sure she wouldn't have cared that. Gillian wouldn't have, like, you know, gone for the genre show of it. This is Gillian back in London wanting nothing to do with genre. And
don't
like
talk to me about
stuff.
Aliens.
Exactly.
but she would have been a little young, but even so, had Chloe when she was 20, would have waited since. So anyway, I think that would have been great casting. But hey, we got one romance that all worked out. But yes.
Something to this too, like, I'm sorry, and then we can move on from Chloe's dream here. But like they always layered in these like what's going to happen to Chloe type things throughout the show, and I really like them. I always liked the idea that like there was always that kind of fear that she might die, you know, like I liked where they were going here, and it kind of feels missed opportunity later on knowing that it's just kind of happy ending for her.
Well, they do that all the time It's like Chloe's gonna go crazy.
That's why I like
it. So Chloe's gonna get killed by Doomsday. Chloe's gonna give up her life powers to save Clark. Yeah. Chloe's gonna, you know, Chloe saved Lois. Now she's gonna die. Like every it's like, okay, guys, we get that we don't know how her character ends, but let's just pick a lane and stick with. Oh, Chloe Sullivan. We've never heard of her. We're from the future.
That was the best one. That was so exciting, especially that many years in where it felt like, oh, we've got to hold on to as much cast as we can.
Well, but that's because she was going to change her name to Lois Lane. That's why they hadn't heard of Chloe Sullivan. But anyway.
Right.
So yes, this is the first we hear of, like, because we heard about Chloe's mom leaving when she was a little kid, you know.
Right, but this is the first mental illness.
Yeah, this is the first, because we're not even sure what this is. You know, I mean, literally, you know, because there's no precedent for this. We find out at the end of the episode in the last scene with Chloe and Clark talking. But, yeah, I mean, you kind of get it, but then you're like, oh, okay, this is new. But anyway, it's not a retcon, but it is, I don't know, we'll talk about it at the last scene.
It's a late ad, yeah.
It's a late ad. We'll be generous and call that. Chloe is running, she's running away from this apparition in this sphere, and she's running through the corridors there, the corridors we're all very familiar with in this model of Luther Corp. And I like how, like, she's like holding her arms like she's in a straitjacket, because in her dream, in her nightmare, she's in a straitjacket. So
I was
going to
say the same
thing.
It was a nice detail.
Hilarious visual, though, Clark riding the cart with the security guard, right?
I know. And then what does he do? Like, he almost like judo chops him to knock him out. Like, it looked like an Austin Powers move, you know?
Austin Powers, again, with the carts and security.
Yeah, good point.
But yeah, why did he have to knock that guy out? Because it's like, oh, here's a woman who's in distress. Let's help her and get her to the hospital. That's all that needed to happen there. Instead, he just knocked this guy out for no reason. So.
It's glory hogging. It's not a good color, Clark.
Yeah. Anyway, so Chloe does go to the hospital. We never see her physically at the hospital. We also never see the Kents physically at the hospital.
Right.
But should we count these as hospital visits, Matt? Because
I think so,
Clark tells Lex everyone else is in the hospital. So.
Yeah, no. I mean, we basically live in the hospital in this episode. So anybody that got admitted, I think, counts, even if we can't see them.
Main character. I mean, it's like an epidemic, so I'm not going to count, like, look at all the people who are, you know.
No, yeah.
You guys understand what we're doing. So anyway, so then we cut to commercial, we cut back, and it's Lex talking to a scientist, and this is Otis.
No way.
Malcolm Stewart is the actor. This is his second of three appearances on Smallville. He was in season one as Lois Lane's mom in Craving.
Okay.
He was Amy Adams. He's in this episode as Otis. And then I always thought, like, oh, yeah, that's cool. He comes back. Like, the same character comes back later on in Onyx, in the episode where Lex gets split into two, right?
Awesome episode,
No, that's a different character, Dr. Sinclair. So
that's so weird, because with that name, you think that they're trying to do something, you know, they're trying to reference.
Yeah, no, I mean, you would assume so. So I'm just going to say that this is the same guy. He doesn't die in this episode. Okay. Right. So I'm just going to say that Mr. Melville, after Clark blew up his greenhouse, he got a job at Luther Corp, right?
Yep.
And then, you know, he died in Onyx. So spoilers. So anyway, nice three-episode run from Malcolm Stewart here. It's just so odd that he would come back as two different Luther Corp scientists, like, just mere episodes apart from each other.
Yeah, and again, with one of them being a reference.
Yeah, of course. And then there is a Otis in the Smallville Season 11.
I was just going to say.
Comic books. Yep. Yeah, who is very much like the Otis from Superman the movie, the Ned Beatty character, who is being referenced by this name.
So. Yes.
But then this is a big exposition scene. Where they're like, Lex is like, how can we have an explosion in this facility? Like, you know, I bought it, though. What about you?
No, I totally bought it. I thought that, you know, villain Lex might come through at some point in this episode. But he was like, he was just concerned Lex guy. How many times did he say, my employees?
Yeah, he still cared about his personnel. Like, this is a very big change between, like, season six, right?
Yeah.
Where he's letting, Phantom Zone criminals just mow down employees.
Yeah, and especially, like, you know, when you first see him, you think you're going to get kind of villainy Lex, but he's just like, I've got to save this plant and do what I can for my employees. I like it.
And we find out that the doctor tells him, Dr. Otis here, tells him that the disease is not contagious, it's contained in this room. So you're thinking to yourself, well, how did Chloe get infected? You know,
right.
But then we find out later that it did spread earlier. But Lex points out, like, it's pure, like, this is information both these characters should know and not need to talk about. But they need to talk about it for us to know. So it's like, well, your father set up this this contract with the military for this toxin. He's like, oh, to bring up someone's worst nightmares? How is that going to help? He's like, well, you can knock out a whole enemy without having to fire a shot.
Were you really not at that board meeting, sir? Because we went over this.
Yeah. They establish what's going on here, and it works. And it does make sense. Like, I buy this. Like, I'm actually surprised. I would be surprised if our actual government isn't working on something like this, to be honest, totally. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we get Clark back at the Kent farm, talking to his parents about the situation. And Lana shows up, and she wants to help because people are starting to die. Like, the first person has died now, and so she's getting really concerned about Jason and stuff.
Right. And they played that. This was like one, and again, I like her acting in it, but this was one note in the episode where I'm like, okay, what is she going to do? Like, what does Lana Lang coming here saying that to the Kents actually mean, you know?
And like, I felt like you assume Clark's on the case. Clark's like, oh, well, I'm just going to wait it out. But
exactly. It kind of felt like that. Like, I know you're trying to hero this, Clark. So let's do this. Mm-hmm. You know?
Exactly. So then this is where the first deleted scene in the episode would be. There are two deleted scenes. And the first deleted scene is Lionel in prison. And he's won a chess game against a fellow inmate. And then he's like, oh, I thought you beat me. He's like, oh, that's because you took your eye off the objective. You know, so it's a very good scene. This is like an A-plus scene from John Glover, as always, right? But he's talking to like.
I have to admit to you that you told me to watch the cutscenes, and then I totally forgot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks, bad co-host, I know. Matt. Yeah, thanks I know. A lot. but yeah, I'll explain that as you'll really see why in the second lead scene. Okay. But he's talking about how like you know he spent his whole life trying to cheat the system and all this. It's very interesting. Like you really see that Lionel has really changed here. Mm. This other inmate comes up to him and is like, oh, you think you're in charge? She's like, no, but do you? He's like, yeah. He's like, well, these people would stab you in the back if they had a chance. And so it's very interesting to see like Lionel like genuinely just being a good guy and looking out for other people and trying to like mentor these other inmates and stuff.
I'm watching the scene on YouTube right now. I also just looked ahead in this video to see what you're talking about with the other cut scene. I can't wait for it.
This is top notch podcasting, folks.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm currently watching what you're discussing on YouTube.
You're right, though. I like even his stance of like he feels like a teacher in a movie of just like I'm gonna help these inner city kids out. Yeah.
That's exactly what it feels like. I really liked this scene. And again, with season four, like I don't know what they could have done, moved around. You know what they should have done, which is cut the Jason nightmare, maybe.
Yeah,
you know, just
yeah.
Entirely. Like I don't know how you would maybe start out with him in the hospital. I think there's a way you could have done it. I don't know, but it's just consistently, season four has so many deleted scenes, and so many of them are, like, good just on their own, and then, like, actually help the story a lot. Right. And I wish they would have made some different choices editing season four together. So.
I also wish that the show itself had focused more on the fact that their villain is in prison for most of this, you know, like
For like three episodes, then he's out. Because
well, yeah, no, but, I mean, like, I wish that the show had looked. Maybe that's why we like season four a little bit less than most other
seasons.
Well,
it's just some missed opportunities. Like, he could have done more Hannibal Lecter stuff.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He could have had fun with the fact that he's behind bars, but he's still this huge presence in our lives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we get a guard comes and says, Luther, the warden wants to see you. So he walks off. And then we would transition into the scene we see in the episode itself. Which is him walking out of the room mm-hmm. and talking to the warden. And the warden basically tells him that his conviction has been overturned and that he's going to be released. And he doesn't want to be released. He feels like he's here not for the crime that he was convicted of. But I love how he just, even though he's good Lionel, he still will not admit. Yeah, he's so that makes me question, like, do you think he killed his parents?
Yes, I do.
Because I'm starting to question it. Okay. But he admits to some other stuff. He's like I've spent my life cheating this system. I bribed the bailiff up to the president of the United States. They told me I would never see the daylight again. You know,
I liked that president of the United States line because of course someone like Lionel would angle for some sort of pardon
and,
like that
and have access to that as well.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So W did not pardon him. So good job, George. But that's the thing, right? He's being so honest about all this other stuff, but he's still like, no, I didn't kill my parents. Like, he takes that to the grave. So, whatever. At least it's consistent, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it was Morgan. What do we know?
I don't know. But the, the warden's like, this is not the Ritz-Carlton. You can't just check in and out whenever you want. Yeah.
I liked this actress, too. I don't remember her if we'd seen her before.
No, I don't think, you know, top-notch podcasting again. Let me look her up. Let's see here. Season 4, IMDb. Uh-huh. All right, so the warden is played by Samantha Ferris, who I really don't recognize from anything, although she was in The 4400, Stargate SG-1, Supernatural, of course, because, yeah, Smallville Season 4, Supernatural Factory. You know, I didn't see X-Files, but yeah, I didn't scroll back that far. But she had one of those familiar faces where it's like, I feel like I've seen you in a show before. But someone has orchestrated this, obviously. And I was like, who could do that? Who could get me out of prison? And they're like, I don't know, someone more powerful than you. He's like, So I wonder who did this. And the writers and the director wonders who does this. So
the show doesn't know yet. Question, Zach. I don't think either of us know who did this.
No, we don't, and neither does the show at this point. So we're all in the same boat.
Is it Genevieve?
Well, I'm going to talk about that when we get to the scene in the limo at the end. Because there are three characters who could have been... Because we've seen multiple big black limos show up and let people out of places. So.
I can think of two, but I look forward to your theories.
I mean, Bridget Crosby and Dr. Swan are like kind of the same, I guess. So either them or Genevieve Teague.
Okay.
Or Morgan Edge. No, he's dead. This Lionel thing, especially when you cut out the deleted scene, it feels just so random. It's like, why are these two scenes in this episode?
Yes.
Like, I guess John Glover wanted to get him on this. Like, you could have done more with the A plot and just put this in another episode. Because, I mean, you had to delete one of the three Lionel scenes anyway. So why didn't you just, I don't know. It's just odd. I understand weekly TV and you can't map everything out. And they wanted to get these pieces in place to move forward. But I think you could have waited a week. But anyway.
Maybe they needed a mount for the next episode. Well, we'll see.
So we have Lana helping Clark at the Talon. The tour. I do that all the time. Plus, it's Lana, so that's a double trick me there. Right. But Lana is helping Clark at the torch here, investigating and looking up like the weather report, basically.
Right.
And there was a 2-mile cloud, and Clark's like, well, it was probably an explosion or something, because why would a cloud be like that? They only last for a certain amount of time and stuff. So at Chloe's house was in the Riggediest. They mentioned that.
So is yours, dude.
Yeah, so is everyone's house, apparently. So is this whole town. They decide, okay, well, this must be what happened here. So they're going to go investigate it. But before they can, Lana gets hit by, you know, this. Apparently her house was there, too.
Yep. Talon was? Right next door to the Kents.
Yeah.
Talon.
That's the old house, yeah.
Sorry.
But Lana, this is very kind of when it starts out very effective, I think, and surreal. Mm-hmm. Like she's like covered in a sheet and she's dead, and then she wakes up and or gets up off the slab, so to speak, and she pulls off all these tarps of all these people. Now I want to talk about who these people are and who is not here. So she sees her mom. Okay.
Uh-huh.
She sees Chloe, her adoptive sister, basically. Mm-hmm. She sees Jason, her current boyfriend. Okay, mm-hmm. These all check out. Who does she not? Who does she not see? She doesn't see Henry Small, her actual father. She sees the guy that was her mom's husband. Like I said, I would say the guy that raised her, but he was only around for like 3 years. So
I get what you. I was just about to say that too. Yeah.
It's like, why is she still connected to this guy? Like as if she has any memories of him, right?
Right.
And you know, we do see, this isn't the last time we see the Langs. We see them in season 5 when we have our Flatliners episode.
Another one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Aunt Nell, also not here. Doesn't care about her.
Nope, couldn't care.
And maybe, I don't know, maybe Clark or Lex make an appearance? No? Okay, sure. So, anyway.
I'm surprised Clark isn't in here and that they went with Jason instead of it, but.
Well, I mean, that's the current boyfriend. Like especially if you're going to have Jason. Right. If you're going to have Clark, you have to have Jason. If you have Jason, you don't have to have Clark. But, you know, someone who in the initial drafts of the script was supposed to be here was Whitney.
That would have been great.
That would
have been awesome.
I understand why they didn't just bring someone back to be a corpse on the table. Like these Lang actors, I don't even know if they're the same ones. They might be. Maybe they're just extras who live in Canada. I don't know. No disrespect to them. But, no. I mean, they were never really characters on the show, right? They were like... you know, across the street and like hit by a meteorite, and that's all there was to it.
But I would even take like a soldier or a guy laying there in the jacket with, you know, Fordman or whatever.
Oh, like Fordman tags or something. Yeah. That would have worked. Yeah, that's a very small Smallville. We can't get Michael Rosenbaum. Let's show Lex move.
Let's put him in a mask.
Darth Lex. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right, because I think part of the thing was like people do keep leaving her life, right? So it would make sense to have people like Whitney,
yeah,
and people like Henry Small, because they were here, now they're gone, and Aunt Nell, right? That's three people right there who this would apply. Lana has not left. Lana. Chloe has not left yet. Jason has not left yet. Right.
Hell, put Gabe in there. They were living together, you know?
He's more of a dad to her than her actual dad, or not actual dad. It's very confusing. Yeah. But anyway, so she's pulling off all these tarps and seeing all these people, and then she sees this other body down the way, and I was like, is this going to be like what, like Genevieve Teague or something, right? Or Isabel, right?
I was worried it was going to be Isabel.
Yeah, me too. But it is Lana, and she has like this again with the zombie stuff. Yeah. But she's kind of like a leopard, like she has spots or something. did you see this? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's like she's been decomposing or something, right?
Yeah, and she's like, they're all going to leave you.
Yeah.
And of course, Jason does leave at the end of the episode, so it is kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy there. But I, you know, you're talking about if these nightmares track, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Jason's, we don't know enough about him, so whatever.
Right.
It's different than all the other ones too. Because he's not in it for the first half. Now, Chloe's tracks, I think, her just recently finding out about this, like,
absolutely,
this would be forefront on her mind.
It's a little strange because we, as an audience, know her very well, and we don't know this about her. But I do like that, yeah, that added bonus of, like, this is how we're going to introduce this fear that's going on with her.
And then Lana's checks out as well, because that's always kind of in her thing, like, people leaving. So like, even, like, at the end of... what was that? Skinwalker, I guess. She's crying with Clark, and she's like, "You're the one good thing in my life. I don't want you to leave too, right?" But not in her dream here. So
nope,
I guess
nope.
She got over that. So these tracks. So they're two for three with the dreams, I think, Matt.
Yeah, I think so too.
Mm-hmm. So they're working on an antidote. Otis and Lex, and they're going to go into like the quarantine area, the room that the explosion happened, and they get their outbreak suits on, and as you said, like Lex is like, I'm going to go in there too, right?
It's one of my employees.
Suits.
I have to go in.
Yeah, an employee, because at Luther Corp, you're like family. so they go in there, Otis and Lex, and they have their hazmat suits on, and they have a test antidote, and Otis is like, we got to test this on like animals or something, and Lex is like, no, there's no time. We have to do this now. My employee's about to die. So they inject the guy, but then he like freaks out and like rips Lex's hazmat suit.
Yeah.
And like, it's not like he had a knife or a sharp object, just his hand. Like, I don't know. I've never tried to rip a hazmat suit because, you know, for obvious reasons, but I don't think a person should do that.
No, probably. Well, you know, this guy always had really long nails, and that was kind of a problem. So it's probably
there it is. Adrenaline, maybe.
I don't know.
Panic attack. So we'll go with that. But Otis, he does say, that's not him. It's the next doctor. He says, we had no idea what we're really dealing with. Like in another Smallville, take a shot.
Right,
like,
but you guys made it. How do you not know?
Yeah. It's either him or the doctor at the hospital. I think it's him who has appeared in other episodes as well.
By the way, before we get called on it, I'm watching it here. He pushes Lex back into those pieces of lab equipment that exploded, and the pieces of lab equipment are what rip his suit here.
Oh, I think I was taking notes as that was happening.
Yeah,
I was like,
no,
that's stupid. He ripped his costume.
If you were looking away, that would not make any sense, but I think he got himself on some of the metal behind him.
See, Matt's lack of preparation paying off. Thank you, Matt. Okay, fair enough, Smallville. I take it back. So we cut to a commercial, I guess, I think. Tell me, Matt, you're watching the episode right now.
And then back to Doctor. I never remember his name, but I really do like the actor.
Doctor who's in lots of episodes. Let's see. Dr. Scanlon.
Scanlon.
Played by Jerry Westerman. And I had a whole thing about the doctors and what their names are in our episode last season on Resurrection.
Okay.
So if you want to hear me talk about all that, take a listen to the first like 15 minutes of that episode, because the way doctors are credited is all wrong. You know, like they use actors' names for some, and then they use the wrong ones for others. And the companion says one thing, the episode says another, the script says something else. So it's all very confusing. But the old crusty doctor, the old crusty white guy doctor at the Smallville Medical Center, he's the one
who
that
always
says
responds
we have
to
no
Lex
idea
like, "Oh God, you again? I don't have time, man."
He's like, I'm dealing with a lot here. And so, but Lex doesn't know at this point, right? Because Otis has told him, oh, no, it's only this room. You know?
Right.
Lex doesn't know that there was a cloud and, like, the whole town is under under the influence now of this stuff. Not under the influence on the tally board. Sorry I used that phrase. but Clark brings Lana in here, so we have a plus one for Lana at the hospital. So three so far.
Again, they're leaning really hard into good guy Lex here. When he realizes that there are people being admitted, he tells the doctor, you know, like he's trying to do the right thing.
So this is not what Lex would do a couple years from now. Absolutely.
No.
Maybe they shouldn't have been working on this kind of thing, but he's trying to make it right. And that's right. What early Lex does in the show. Because even Clark's like, did you know about this before we talked? And Lex tells him, look, I didn't know. I thought it was contained at Luther Corp. You have to believe me. And Clark's like, yeah, okay, whatever, Lex. but then Clark looks to his side and there's a meteorite explosion.
Yeah.
And apparently there's a second meteor shower. Now, what a stupid idea that would be, Matt, if they had a second. can you imagine if they had a second meteor shower on this show? Worry. That would just be stupid.
Only ever in dreams, Zach.
Yeah, they wouldn't be dumb enough to actually do that in the real show.
For the end of this year or two.
Where do those meteors come from?
they went the other way, you know.
It's just like, anyway, that's a discussion for commencement, but the show foreshadowing itself a little bit. Actually, Brian Peterson in The Companion had this to say, quote, Clark's nightmare of the meteor shower, we intended for that to pay off. I don't know that we knew it would be in the finale, but later in the season, we wanted to pay it off. So, Smallville planning, right there.
Yeah, right.
From the words of the writer, producer.
It also looked awesome. Like, obviously, they had a bit of an explosion, practical explosion in the hospital to throw whatever gurneys and stuff around. But then even the visual effects... in the parking lot shot and when it hits Lana's room, like, it just looks great.
I 100% agree. I think this is really effective.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's not as intense as the pilot, which was
the
whole thing. But yeah, no, it looks really good. I'm going to keep an eye out. I wonder if they're going to use stock footage of this when the second meteor shower does happen.
Sure. Because those cars in the parking lot could be cars in the parking lot at the graduation ceremony, huh?
Exactly. But yeah, this was very effective. And then so Clark rushes in to check on Lana, and he gets hit by a meteor, you know, which is like, that should kill Superman, I would assume. But it's a
according
dream.
According to Superman Returns, it's just going to hurt him a lot.
Yeah. Not only can he lift up a continent full of it, he can do it while a piece of it's in his back.
Yep.
So anyway, that's the thing for me, Matt, in Superman Returns. Like, I'm willing to accept he could lift that continent because it was diluted, it was spread out, whatever, right?
Right.
But the fact that he had a shard of kryptonite in his back, no, yeah. Absolutely not. So anyway.
They got the big pieces out, but anyway.
Yeah. It's the little ones that do the most damage.
Apparently.
So Lana picks up some meteor rock, and Clark's like, oh, you have to help me. I'm from a planet called Krypton. She's like, you're not even human.
Mm-hmm.
You're the reason my parents are dead. You killed my parents, right? And I'm like,
I loved this.
This is exactly what Clark's worst nightmare would be,
yep.
Right? When he finds out he came with a meteor shower. Right. Even you go back all the way to like the pilot and Metamorphosis, right?
Mm-hmm.
He says, like, man, like, I brought so much destruction here. Like Lana's parents died in this meteor shower when he sees her on the wall of weird, right? And
yeah.
She's like, oh, don't worry, Clark, it's not your fault. He's like, eh, you know. So this tracks for me as well. This for been to be his worst fear.
Oh, this one's perfect. And it escalates. It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse for him. Like, I agree. This is exactly what he would fear. This is the worst version of this.
And then as Lana is prone to do, she kills him. Stabs him with a piece of meteorite.
Shivs him, man, yeah.
Oh, man, just like Lex Luthor in Superman Returns. So,
and again, her acting here is really good and hurt and like kind of dreamy out of it, but also weirdly like juvenile and little girl. It's good. It feels creepy and dreamlike, you know?
Also, I mean, like, by this point in the episode, you know that it's, like, not real.
Right.
But, like, they didn't do, like... I mean, with Chloe and Lana, it was very obvious when, like, we're in the dream world now, right?
Yeah.
But with Clark, he just kind of looks over and, like, there's an explosion. So if you're caught up in the moment, you can kind of question it, like,
mm-hmm.
if this is real or not. But anyway, I this is very effective and very well done just across the board. Special effects, story, and acting. So good job by all involved in this sequence here. So let's keep this the dream sequence, okay? Don't bring back a second meteor shower, please. After Lana stabs him with the kryptonite, he wakes up. So that's not suspicious at all, right?
No.
The only guy to wake up. Even the doctor's like, Clark, like, we have to, you know, this is, I need to do some studies on you. He's like, no, I have to go. Because thinking about Lana saying that her parents had died made Clark think about his parents. So oh, he
I like
you
putting
home.
That together. I like that they didn't really talk about it. He just woke up and knew he, that he had to go check
and
on
he
them.
Said mom, I think. So it's either that or Martha.
I have to say hey, mom.
Yes, so because we all refer to our mothers by their first name, not mom. Yeah, but yeah, he woke up and he said mom, and I think that was them trying to tie it together. That's why he rushed home. But then he goes back home and he sees the kids and they really okay. This would as Clark says at the end, it's an unsettling thing to come home and see your parents passed out and stuff like this, right?
Oh yeah.
But I had to laugh the fact they just went over the top with how much stuff can they break when they pass out? Because Jonathan has like knocked over a lamp and there's glass. Martha, not only has she dropped a tray of muffins, also there's a phone that is off the hook and the busy signal is going. It's like, guys, tone it down just a little bit.
I love the muffins, Ed. And also I felt like the implication later on, because Martha's got just like a weird look to Clark when they're talking about what happened. Like, I think she hit Jonathan with the lamp.
Oh yeah, someone did a real number on the lamp back
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I really yeah, exactly. You know, like and she's just got a strange look to him during that scene. I'm like, "Oh." Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, you know, of course, you know, he takes him to the hospital. We have a plus 2 cuz when he shows up at Luther Corp, he's like, "They're in the hospital now." So that's total of 5 so far. And Otis is like, "How'd you get in here?" And Lex is like, "It's okay." Because it's Clark, you know. And Clark offers to use his blood, right? Because he woke up. Right, because Lex is like, "What happened, Clark? When I left you, you were passed out in hospital bed." Right, and again, file this away in the "Hey, Clark's immune to things that normal people aren't." Let's put that in the on the wall of weird, so to speak. But I like Clark, and whenever presented with this problem, Clark will always do the right thing, even if it's like, "Oh no, they're gonna find out my secret." Like the Kents didn't talk about this at the end, but they're like, "We don't have time for another antidote. This needs to get up to 3,000 degrees." You know, all these things are going on, right? So Clark offers to use his blood, like but then the scientists, Otis and Lex, both say, "Look, that would take years to like analyze and figure that out. We're sorry." Although by the time season 9 happens, he just needs to bleed on somebody, and they can be healed. They're Kryptonians, so we're going to overlook that.
Right. But that is a very Clark Kent thing, and there's parts of how the character is played in the show that just don't always feel like he's going to be the Superman we know for me. But like that almost goes to like even like the Man of Steel things of like, should I have not saved those people? Like he will always look to the sacrificing himself is not going to be an issue for him if he thinks that it can help someone.
Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty consistent thing, I think, as you said, Man of Steel, Lois and Clark, you know, all interpretations of Superman, like that is a core trait that I think pretty much all of them get correct, even the more divisive ones.
Yeah, but it's just nice to see them hit it pretty well here. Mm-hmm.
But Clark's blood is a recurring thing on Smallville, right? We had the whole thing within season 2 and 3, right. And then, as I mentioned, season 9. So, but that is a thing. Like, and I like that. I like that that's always, it's like in Heroes, because I'm contractually obligated to mention Heroes as often as possible. You have Claire's blood on Heroes. And once you introduce magic blood that can resurrect people, you've kind of jumped the shark. Now, we haven't really established, like, all the things that Clark's blood can or cannot do.
Right.
And he is an alien. Right, so there's some wiggle room there, but anyway, I'm glad it's not just like instant resurrection device. Like
that's Tears later on too.
That's Tears. That's very good. Lex tells her, Otis, one of the two of them tell Clark, "We have to wait like 4 more hours because this has to heat up to 3,000 degrees Kelvin."
Right.
So you know, what do? You just blast it with heat vision, and instead of blowing up, it heats up the oven. Now, I it's fine. I understand, but that is kind of suspicious. Right, like if I were Lex,
and they
Otis,
all
I'd be
look
like,
at each other like with no explanation of how that happened. Just like, I guess I'll get the vials now.
Well, see, I would be like, if I were them, really, if that really happened, they'd be like, "Oh, well, I think something must be wrong with this batch. Let's start over."
Right,
right. And I'd be like, "Clark, be like, no, you don't understand. I heated it up for y'all."
So, yeah. What is going on with this lab today? Jeez.
Oh man. So yeah, it's would you? I guess they're desperate at this point, right? But if something something's supposed to take 4 hours and then it just happens immediately, you would be a little suspicious.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Especially if it's right in front of you as it's going.
Right. But Otis says, "This time we're going to test it on someone first." And Lex is like, "No, there's no time.
There's no
time. My employees are dying." So Lex really cares about Luther Corp employees. And he injects himself with the fear toxin. Well, that's something that Otis said earlier. He's like, it's like the flu vaccine, right? There's a trace element of the virus,
right,
or bacteria in it to kill it, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what a lot of people don't get about you know, vaccines and stuff. And that's why, Matt, what are your thoughts on anti-vaxxers? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah, let's get into that, Zach. You know what? Yeah, I missed measles so much. It's great that it's back.
So anyway, Lex injects himself with this, and then we get a flash to some stock footage of season one, episode six, Hourglass, where he's the president of the United States, a vision that he did not see. And then we get some more stock footage from Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. We joke about this being in Smallville all the time. It's really only in it twice. But the fact that it's here with something from another episode makes you think it's like three times.
Right. And it's tied to this thing that, like, especially for fans, is such a huge part of the teasing in this show.
Yeah, the President Lex thing.
President Lex.
So the thing about the President Lex thing is he didn't see that.
Yeah, so is this the first time that this has come into his head, I guess?
So am I to assume his greatest fear... Like, well, okay, so it's really cool to see this, right? Let's just say that, right? This is a cool sequence. You see President Lex, you see the world get destroyed, right?
Yep.
And it's not surrealism like it was in season one.
Not as much. Though there is the, like, yeah. He's walking slowly through the bones, Oval Office. Yeah. And, yeah.
But it's weird because, like, I get the way they constructed it in season one, it was like a special effect montage, right? So yes. I assume they couldn't, like, take the raw footage and make it not like weird looking, you know, like not surreal. Yeah. Like it's baked into it, like the glow and that kind of stuff. So that's why it doesn't quite match the Terminator 3 stuff, which really does look like, you know, stock footage from Terminator 3. Mm-hmm. But hey, we make fun of that, but hey, all power to him, right? Whatever, right?
Oh, totally. You got to do what you got to, you know, that's an easy way for producing television to get something like that, especially back then when special effects were a lot of money and took a lot of time.
So it's cool to see all that. And yeah, that is like, you know, that's a worst case scenario. Lex Luthor becomes president, starts some kind of nuclear war. You know, there we are.
And enjoys it.
Yeah. And that's like his greatest fear at this point. Like achieving, you know, ultimate power and then destroying the world. Although they don't show him like enjoying it as much in this one. They kind of zoom in on him. Like we don't
yeah,
see
but
like
that,
the
just like placid content look on his face.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. Like admiring his handiwork.
Yeah. Like, so like, are we saying that his greatest fear is becoming even more powerful than his father, becoming the absolute worst version of what he could be?
Yeah, I guess that's what it would be. So that's what's in the episode. Okay.
Yeah.
Now that you've watched the deleted scene, Matt, why don't you tell us about the second deleted scene in this episode.
This is very strange, and I wonder, is there any talk in the companion of where this fits in, or was this just supposed to be part of the President Lex thing?
Yes, in the companion, Al Goff has this to say. Basically, it was something that I never liked, but the writer sort of pushed Lex's nightmare of marrying his mother. It just had no climax, especially when you look at the other scenes. The change was last minute. We were down the road with shooting, and the final scene was completely constructed in post. So...
Oh,
they did this because they didn't necessarily like the whole, you know, Lillian Luthor,
yeah,
you know, marriage, death.
To recap
thing.
The scene for anybody that hasn't watched it, it is it's eerily similar to a wedding that's going to happen in a couple of years, but we're slow pushing in the Luthor mansion, and Lex is standing there with a bride who's got a veil over her face, and he pulls the veil back, and it's Lillian, it's his mother. And he goes in for, like, it's all very edible and weird, but he goes in for a hug and pulls away and realizes that she's bleeding and he's stabbed her, I think.
Yeah. Well, we don't see that action, but it's like in the dream it doesn't happen, but as she tells him, like, you killed Julian, I wish you had never born.
Right.
He's
That's
like, don't you love
me?
Yeah, he's like, there's what's left to love? You're just as evil as your father. And then he's like, don't say that. And he, like, starts choking her to death. And then he wakes up.
Yeah.
So, okay. Cool
like
to see
it.
President Lex, right?
President Lex was the better move. But there is something. There's something interesting here. I cannot make heads or tails of why he's marrying his mother.
Yeah. Well, it's some weird Oedipal thing because even in Bound, in the last episode, Lionel has his one-off line, right? Because Clark's talking to him in prison, and Lionel's like, "They're all brunettes," and Clark's like, "Yeah." And I was like, yeah, they reminded him of Lillian. I'm like, why? Since when does Lex Luthor have his Oedipal complex?
Right.
But it's interesting because he's kind of fixated on his mom. He's like, well, you know, before my mother died. And, you know, he has this weird fixation because that's like the like, you know, life before it all went to hell, basically, for him.
Right. And he's
but
got
it's,
this
it's,
crazy repressed memory that we all know about.
Yes, exactly. And they brought back the actress, right? Yeah. Who played her. So this was like legit, and she comes back again in season 5. So mm-hmm. like there's good continuity here. Like I feel like honestly, as cool as the President-elect scene was, although we'd seen it before with the Terminator 3 footage this time around, this would have been more appropriate for the episode, I think, because
it would have been just as memorable, I think.
Yeah, because it ties into previous Smallville continuity, so like yep. Julian and his mom, right, and the reason she killed Julian was, you know, and all those things, and then we have, you know, the whole like weird thing with his mom that they kind of hinted at the last episode. We have his greatest fear of, like, you know, I guess that tracks for me too. Like, yeah, his greatest absolutely. Fear is he's the cause of all, like, his mother dying and his brother dying mm-hmm. and all those things, of destroying his own family and becoming his father.
Yeah.
Which his mother tells him he's becoming his father, which is his worst fear. So, I think you say the President-elect is the better move. I think this might have fit in better, in my opinion.
Maybe. Okay. The marrying the mom thing is throwing me off.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I don't know why it had to be straight. That.
Like, I get... Al or Miles, whoever that quote was, decision there.
Al Miles, yeah.
Al Miles.
as they're described.
Milargolf.
I get why they were like, I don't know. But, I mean, at that point, just leave it. You've already done so much weird stuff in season 4. You're telling me that this has to be changed?
Yeah,
so.
Okay.
Anyway, so Lex wakes up. He's fine. They know the vaccine's going to work. They're going to vaccinate the whole town. The day is saved. So then we cut to Lionel, who's apparently wearing Lex's white suit from the season premiere, and he comes out of jail. Like, I just like, don't you have to leave jail with what you went in there with? Where did he get this white suit?
The same thing.
Yeah. But he's strolling out. You know, he's got his little sack of whatever he had. There's this big black limo. He looks in the window. He kind of peers in, laughs, jumps in, says, I should have known. And then it drives off.
I should have known.
And at this point, I think that they're not sure how they're going to play it. So again, much like the Jason nightmare, good job on keeping everything vague enough, right? Yep. We can go in any direction. I mean, obviously, Dr. Swan, you know, Christopher Reeve had passed away at this point, right? So they know they couldn't use Dr. Swan. In theory, it could have been the Swan Foundation, either through him or Bridget Crosby, mm-hmm. who at the time, everybody thought, this is Bridget Crosby, because she had picked up Lionel's cellmate from the prison, like just a few episodes ago, in the exact same way. So you're like, okay. And it transfers. And the other one would be Genevieve Teague, because we've seen her in a big black limo, and the Luthers and the Teagues have some kind of relationship, I guess, or at least I don't know if that's even established at this point. I mean, who do you think it is, and who would make the most sense in your opinion, Matt?
I don't. It's because season 4 is still quite a blank in my mind. Like, honestly, listening to your show the past couple weeks has reminded me of a lot of stuff.
I don't remember either.
Yeah, my feeling would be. Just knowing where we're at with the show, that it's Genevieve, though I agree with you. I don't remember how much they tied the Luthers in with the Teagues here yet, or if
I feel like
I'm
it's probably explained in
season 4, season 7 retcon stuff.
I feel like it's probably explained in a deleted scene, Matt. So
watch it the crux of the next episode, and neither of us remember it.
Totally, we're such idiots. Yeah. I want to say there is a scene where Dr. Quinn tells Lionel, "When I got you out of prison," I see it in my head, like she's holding like a glass of wine or something.
I can see it. Scotch glasses from the mini bar. Yes. Yeah,
I can see it in my head. We'll see. That's what's fun about season 4, because I don't revisit it very much, so I don't have like an encyclopedic memory like I have with some other seasons.
Right. Again, this is a new episode to me, so this is great.
Exactly. So we get the Kents and Clark back at home, and they're talking about, you know, Clark was just going to go in there and reveal a secret to save the day. Mm-hmm. And, so that's interesting discussion to be had there. They also talk about Clark's nightmare about Lana has convinced him, like, I can definitely never tell Lana my secret. And Jonathan's like, well, son, I don't know if it's Lana, but I'm sure someday there will be someone you can tell. So...
it's a great little scene from them. It's also weird to have it in the middle of this episode when the episode has been clipping along from minute one, you know? But then it does feel like the tone shifts here and kind of goes back to the CW Smallville of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then speaking of, our next scene is Lana and Jason. And she's like, hey, she brought Chinese food to the rescue.
Is this the first version of like this type of scene? Because this reminds me of like Lois and Oliver in Justice and...
What do you mean?
We're like the like literally both scenes are the girlfriend comes in back or ready to go do whatever they were going to do or bring food or whatever. And he's just standing there waiting to tell her that it's over.
Oh, okay. I'll keep an eye out for that. But it is a trope of some kind. Yes.
Yeah.
She's just like, well, if I would have waited, would you be gone? You know?
his answer to that is good. But
there you go.
You would have found me sitting here trying to figure out what to say.
And so he's going to leave because he lived there, right? Wrapping back around to what we were talking about earlier. He's packing his little bag. Maybe it was just his overnight bag. Maybe he was going to stay that weekend. And then
same implications
mind.
Here. Okay.
Hey, it is established in season 5.
I know.
They did not have a physical relationship of intimacy to that degree. But anyway, this is where I'm really starting to get confused about season 4. I'm like, are they breaking up? I don't even know what's going on in this scene because I don't know who lives where or what was decided on or what's going on. So,
aren't they breaking up? Like, he's saying that it's over. He's got to go.
But he's not going to live
anymore? Yeah.
They're taking a break? Like, their whole relationship from the jump has been so ill-defined.
We feel like Clark.
Yeah, I feel like it happened so fast.
Didn't even know what was happening. What?
I feel bad for Lana here, right? Because, well, she says, like, if there's one thing I learned about my relationship with Clark is when people are lying to me. It's like, damn. Because he says he's leaving because of all this craziness and like, he doesn't want to be that person who has to go to Lex for a job. Like, it's a nice attempt at a cover story, Jason, but we all know it's BS, right?
Right. Right.
So why do you think he's really leaving, Matt?
I don't remember. It's got to be related to the mom thing, right?
Yeah, because she even says that. Does it have to do with your mom? You've been weird since your mom
showed up.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's... And again, these are things that I either don't remember that well or I know for a fact season 4 does not explain very well. So we'll keep an eye on this.
Yeah,
totally. But hey, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Lana was afraid people were going to leave her life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's Jason walking out of her life. So that was... Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought that tied together pretty well.
And it did feel like it does feel like a breakup at the end of this scene, because doesn't he like kiss her and she looks off all kind of upset? And
yeah, because having, much like you, having not remembered the specifics, I expected them to like passionately kiss and be like, all right, we're gonna work this out, right? But instead, he just kind of like hugs her. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So a little out of the peck on the cheek or a hug or something. I didn't remember it then, can't remember it now. but anyway, so he leaves and then we get a song, Falling, by Mindy Smith. Not remembering much of this episode. I didn't remember this song very well, but hey, it's here and it fits. It fits in the Smallville catalog of songs.
Thank you for your efforts, Mindy.
Yeah. Tonight's music brought to you by. So we get a last scene here with Clark and Chloe, and they're at the torch. I almost said Alan. They're at the torch.
Great save. Yeah. Five, they redress the torch.
It's a five-letter word. It starts with a T. Give me a break.
Wow,
right?
Yeah.
So that's why I get them confused. Our two female leads, it's their both of their bases of operations. So give me a break. Anyway, so Chloe's all like freaking out, like, Luther Corp won't give me a quote, and can't believe this, and blah, 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 blah. And she's really over exaggerating her drama with this. And I thought this is pretty true to life, right?
Yep.
She's dealing with other stuff. So... It's coming out like, I'm frustrated about this, but she's really frustrated about this other thing.
Right.
And she's been
too afraid, clearly, to tell her friend about this, to tell anybody about this.
Yeah. Well, Clark of all people would understand. Keep it secret. but see, this is where I was confused. Like, she's like, I found my mom, Clark. He's like, oh, wow, that's great. He's like, no, it's not great. She's in a mental institution. So I was like, wait, did she think about her mom because of this vision? And that's how she found out about the disease, because that would make sense.
The implication was that before this, she had found out about that. She had been thinking about it. She'd been worried about it. So that when she gets hit with scarecrow toxin, that's what comes out. You know.
Well, no, I agree. Like eventually they came around to that because she's like, she'd only known about it for a little bit. But watching it, not knowing, I was just confused. I was like, wait, how did she just find this out just now? You know, I didn't realize that she was telling Clark that she had done this in the past. I mean, the scene eventually does come around to it. Yep. But it was confusing, I think. And so I don't know if it doesn't really track. Like, I liked it in season 2 when it was simple. like she was from a broken home and her mom ran off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she has abandonment and attachment issues. And that was fine. But again, Smallville can't leave well enough alone. We got 10 seasons. We got to stretch all these story threads out. First, she was just, Chloe was a broken home. Okay. Then it was, my mom has a mental illness and it's hereditary. Okay. My mom is a meteor freak and Wonder Woman. Okay. It's like you keep upping the game. So what did you think of all this?
Now I'm wondering if this was an ad in this episode just because they needed to have her have some sort of nightmare and they couldn't come up with something, because presumably her nightmare would look a lot like Lana's, just like the people in my
Animate
life
issues.
Keep living, yeah. It keep leaving. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that Lex's original nightmare was about his mom and Chloe's right. is about her mom. And then Lana's mom is in it. So, there's a thread.
Yeah. Everybody dreams about their mom.
Martha!
There's history about dreaming about your moms, and yeah. Hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. Someone was reading some Sigmund Freud before writing this episode, I think. But no, this is a good scene between the two of them. I love what Clark says here. He's like, because they're trying to have a bonding moment. He's like, people think they're so close to you, but they have no idea what you're really going through, right? And I think that is a universal truth, I think. You know?
Sure. And, but because, something that they always do focus on the show, you know, like this is the show of lies and secrets. That's
yes.
very much a theme for the whole series.
She asked Clark what his greatest fear was, and it was everyone being. I guess everyone's greatest fear is just being alone.
Being alone.
Everyone being dead, right? Clark's like everybody, because that's what he tells you. Like everybody was gone, everybody was dead. So that was more like his greatest fear after he woke up, you know?
Right. Right.
Well, actually, that's what he says. He's like, "Oh, it's when I woke up," right? And that makes sense. And that was his. And going back to Hourglass, right? I mean, that was his. He was really afraid of that future. He sees all the graveyards, the gravestones, headstones, and stuff. That was really cool. So they have this bonding moment here about this, and Chloe's like, "Well, I'd like to say I'll always be there for you, but I really can't say that anymore because of this hereditary disease." And it's like, this is them, like you said, Matt, them setting up Chloe's going to have a bad ending, right?
Yeah, yeah. But again, they're putting, especially with this, like they've over the series, they put a lot of things into play at whether it's going to be that she's going crazy, that she's a meteor freak, that she's whatever, you know, like this is just the first version of this after they fake kill her at the end of season 3, you know?
Of course. Right. But yeah, we end, it's like, it's just kind of a, I don't know, this was a good scene. It was a weird kind of scene to end on because Chloe's like, I can't, you know, I've been walking around with this secret for months. I can't imagine living like that. She's like, if you can't, Clark, you don't have to tell me, you know, it's odd that you were the only person that survived this. You know, I understand. I told you, I promised I wasn't going to investigate you. That's fine. But hey, I'm your best friend. If you can't tell me, who can you tell?
Yeah.
And it kind of ends on that note.
Which is a nice out for the series, you know, for the episode, though it just doesn't feel like I was saying, there's just that shift in this episode in tone right at the Kent scene. Or the Kent, or
after the climax, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it just comes right back down to it. But it's thinking of how this episode starts so stark and odd, I would have liked to see it a little stranger at the end.
Yeah, because structurally it is odd, because, I mean, they saw the problem with about, like, a good 12 minutes left in the episode.
So it's just,
let's wind this down. And
but now we all have to talk about
these
it.
Characters. Yeah, let's talk about our feelings.
Yeah.
I don't know how it should have ended. I just felt like... This was a good scene. I just felt like I was waiting for another scene after this to like really properly end the episode.
So, popular question of the day. What is Clark Kent's worst nightmare?
When I woke up, everyone that I knew was gone. I was completely alone.
I wish I could say that I'll always be there for you, but somehow I get the feeling that may not be a promise I can keep. You were the only one that came out of it, Clark, and I don't think it's because you've been taking your vitamins.
Chloe.
Look, you know what? You don't have to tell me. I know that I gave you my word that I was going to stop all of this prying, but... in these last few months, I really got a taste of what it was like to keep my mom's secret. And I've never felt more alone.
It's weird when people think they're so close to you but have no idea what you're really going through.
Yeah. I'd hate to live my whole life like this. But after fessing up, it's amazing how quickly that feeling of loneliness disappears. I mean, if you can't tell your best friend, who can you tell? Right, Clark?
Scare got an 8.6 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 1 out of 5. So, Neil is on a streak of ones here. And in his super short review, this is what he says, to just add some context. Lana is the focus of another man's perverse fantasy. Chloe goes, boodily, boodily, boodily. Clark is really cruel to some poor guard who did nothing but join the guard union. And Lex is a bad guy for stopping someone from trespassing in a fertilizer plant. 1 of 5. So, again, I post his reviews to our social media. You guys can read them at your own leisure and see where he's coming from. But like, I understand why he would rank, you know, Jinx or... Jinx was actually a lot better than I thought, too. But, like, Spell and even Bound is questionable, but it kind of, like, Bound was actually a lot better than I remember. But man, Neil's drinking the haterade for this. You guys thought I hated season 4. So that being said, Matt, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Scare?
I don't find it nearly as offensive as Neil Bailey did, but it's a passing grade. So I'm going to give it a C. There's nothing super important about it, but it was, I liked it as it was clipping along there. It felt fun. We got some cool visuals and stuff for the future. I really liked the meteor sequence and even the changes. I still really liked the President Lex stuff. So I'm going with C.
All right, C for you. I'm going to give this a surprisingly higher score. I'm going to give this a B+.
Whoa, okay.
Because, I mean, like, I think it really did move along very well. Mm-hmm. I felt a lot of the drama, the tension. Like, it wasn't too... There wasn't a lot of contrivances here. Like, everything actually did kind of make sense. It's great that Jason was taken off the board immediately, so we didn't have to deal with him until the very end of the episode, you know? This was a very solid... And then Lex, you know, doing the right thing. Was cool, you know. Like you said, you expect him to be all evil, nefarious Lex here, but he's not that. And Clark having to like do be self sufficient because everybody is just falling, you know, passing out around him. You know, he can't go. Chloe didn't, you know, give him all the answers this week. You know,
Milana helped. So.
Yeah, she helped him with the Google search. Correct. So I'm gonna give it a B+. This was a solid episode of Smallville, and a good way to give you some insight into the characters. And really did enjoy what they did with pretty much everybody, but Jason, which again, he's such a question mark.
You know? Right, right.
It's hard to judge, but anyway.
As the theme of season 4, if you take out some of the Jason Lana stuff, it's actually pretty good.
That's right. I'm thinking about re-editing season 4. So let's go to the tally board. So we have a episode title set in episode plus one. So that brings us to 30 so far. And we have a plus 5. For hospital visits, Matt, a plus 5. So that brings us to 56 hospital visits for our characters.
Hold on, I've got the end. All right, this is the 76th episode of the show. That's insane that you've had people in the hospital.
We're going to catch up, Matt.
You're going to lap it.
I have faith. You, remember season 8? I mean, like, one of our characters works at the hospital.
And we have two hospitals.
That's right. Smallville and Metropolis. Although, I think they repaint the Smallville set, so they never go back to Smallville Hospital after they...
Oh, okay. Oh, did we not see it?
To Metropolis. I don't know. I'll keep an eye out.
Smallville Medical Center.
It's way more difficult to repaint a set than to redress a set, so it's not like the torch. And then the Bechdel test. This one is a fail, I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm thinking...
There's no time for anybody to talk to anybody.
People are just passing out left and right. There's no time.
Yeah.
So. Oh, boy. So there you have it.
And two honorary Lana kills, but they're just dreams, so it's fine.
And one honorary wedding, right? Because we have a deleted scene of a dream, right? I thought about that, too, but it's a deleted scene, and it was a dream anyway. But there you have it. But don't worry, guys. We'll have a wedding next week. So, Matt, a lot of fun talking about Scare with you. Where can people find you out there on the internet, man?
Oh, always on Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman. We've been a little dark for a while, but we've got our backlog and our Instagram and Facebook. And yeah, hit us up and find us and hopefully enjoy the episodes if you're a big Superman fan.
And I recommend it. So, all right, as for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Standard Orbit, on the Trek FM podcasting network. We talk about all things old and new Captain Kirk and the Enterprise over there. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. And as for the podcast here, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. Find us on Facebook at AlwaysSoLongToSmallville. And you can send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com, once again, with one S. All right, well, that's going to do it.
That was scary, man. Another one on the books.
Yeah, just crossed off the list. But stay tuned next time for Unsafe. But until then, always hold on to small.